This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, we visit a traditional herbalist in her forest home to talk with her about her battle with the Federal Food and Drug Administration. So now, let's go inside the Compass. Denise Joy is a traditional herbalist and healer of the mythic variety, the recipient of ancient lore of the healing arts passed down from great-grandmother to great-granddaughter for more centuries than even she knows. And like the wise women of the fireside tales of yore, she lives in a tiny cottage in the woods, surrounded by the gardens in which she grows the herbs she combines into tinctures and essential oils with which she treats the ills of her friends and neighbors, along with a growing number of supplicants who come to her courtesy of the World Wide Web. Joy managed to make a comfortable living for herself and her family from her special knowledge for more than 30 years. But in mid-September, a Federal Food and Drug Administration agent showed up at the door of the yurt in the woods just off of Discovery Road, from which Joy purveys the some 250 products of her Mountain Spirits Herbals line, to accuse her of selling unapproved drugs. A visit that has threatened Joy with ruin, and which she equates with the witch hunts that persecuted or destroyed her ancestors. I went to visit Joy in her forest home recently to talk with her about that visit and how she's dealing with it.
My whole life has been turned upside down by that visit from the FDA.
I woke up early that morning and realized that I needed to mop the shop. It was just compelled to completely clean my shop. And I was just scrubbing, cleaned the whole shop. And just as the floor was finished, I got a phone call. "Hi, this is Gerald," whatever his last name is. "I'm from the FDA. And are you still in business?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, I'm at your site and nobody is here. It seems to be abandoned." And I said, "Did you follow GPS?" And he said, "Yes." I said, "Well, GPS sends you to the other end of town over by the bus depot. So you are not at my site, and I am still in business." Now, going through my head, I'm going, "Oh, my God, the FDA, I could just lie." But no, I really can't. So I gave him directions, and he showed up, and I hadn't had breakfast that morning yet. He showed up. It was probably about 10:30 in the morning by the time he got here, and he was here until probably 4:30, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. He was here for 5 hours.
5 hours? What was happening in all that time?
He was interrogating me. He was asking me about my business, asking me if I was a drug company or a dietary supplement company, and I kept saying to him, "No, I'm a traditional herbalist. I'm not a drug company. I'm not a dietary supplement company. I'm not sure what you're talking about. I've been doing this, you know, my whole life and professionally for 31 years. And then he started over again, and he would ask me in a different way. And then he would do it again, and he would ask me.
But he was trying to get you to use these particular words.
He wanted me to say that I was a dietary supplement company or a drug company. He had already figured out that I was an unapproved drug company. And by unapproved, meaning that the products I was selling and still sell, but I'm in the middle of changing everything, have the names of medical terminology. I use the word cough. A cough is a medical terminology. It's something that happens
medically. A headache.
Headache is a medical
sore terminology. Throat.
Yes, any of that kind of stuff. I have an oil called trauma oil. Now that's being called comfort oil, because trauma is something that happens in a hospital.
So you're having to relabel everything.
I'm having to relabel everything. Today, before the power went out, I was about to go and register with the FDA as a dietary supplement company. Once I register with the FDA as a dietary supplement company, it gives them permission to come in and start going over my facility and deciding what's I can use and how I can do it. At this point, I am hopeful that I can make it through, but realistically, I'm not sure I will be able to.
So all herbals,
they're hitting, they are searching the websites. If you have a website, you are subject to have them come. That's how they found me. And now that I'm in this network, I'm discovering more and more companies. The small ones are getting knocked out. Anyone my size is, they're pretty much knocking us out. They consider a small company to be 500 employees or less.
And how many employees are you?
Me.
You're just working on your own. You have no...
I have help. No employees. I have apprentices that come in and help, students of mine who have been, are either currently taking my course or have taken my course that like to come and learn, and they learn a lot by helping me pour tinctures and working. Because, you know, when we're working with the plants, they ask questions that may not have come up in class, and hands-on experience is always far superior than class time.
How did you get your experience?
My great-grandmother was an herbalist. When I was a child, I grew up in the East Coast, and I had a very serious accident where I was in the hospital for the whole summer, from June until late August. And my great-grandmother called my father and told him to bring me. And so that January or February, when we were visiting family in New York, I went to my great-grandmother's, and she pretty much started teaching me about plant medicine. And it sounds so weird, but it was really secretive. I couldn't tell my dad or my parents. Everything was verbal. I couldn't write anything down. So I had to learn everything by rote. And
what kind of tradition did she grow up in? I mean, where did she learn what she knew?
She was a gypsy Jew, which is not very many of them, but I've met a few. And her tradition that she came from is the great-grandmother taught the great-granddaughter.
Back, so you were perfect for this.
I was perfect. I was a little old. In their tradition, children were born to 14-year-olds. It was pretty common to have children between 14 and 20. And so your mother was too close, and even your grandmother wasn't that much older than you. So that's where it became your great-grandmother. Whereas in today's tradition, a lot of children aren't even born until people are in their 30s. And so a great-grandmother probably wouldn't even be alive. But in my great-grandmother's tradition, I come from a large village training more. And
I'm sorry, where was that village, by the way?
It was Odessa, is where my great-grandmother came from in Russia. The village she actually grew up in, and the village areas, her family traveled a lot. But the village areas that she grew up in no longer existed by the time she came to America. The only thing I know is that she got her family out in all of the villages when Stalin came to power, and she got out after Stalin had already closed the borders and snuck onto a boat. I don't know the full details. I do remember as a child thinking, oh, she ate like a cow and traveled in the fields. She escaped, and she said she ate off the land. And that was my 8-year-old mind thinking of how, you know, as a kid, I saw a cow eating off the land, and that image never went away.
How old was she when you were 8?
Well, she died at 105 when I was 16.
Oh, okay.
So she was old.
She was 97 or something, yeah. Then when she started to teach you.
Yes, and very strong and very clear-headed. And she died, the day she died, she had walked 3 miles, made herself dinner, breakfast. She lived alone. And they found her the next morning. She had died peacefully in her sleep. And she was strong and healthy and never a nursing home. I don't think she'd ever been to a doctor in her whole life.
Really? But she was an herbalist, so she didn't need doctors.
No. Well, you know, we still need doctors. I mean, when I break a leg, I don't go to an herbalist. I go to a doctor.
Yeah.
You know, there's a time and place for doctors, and they've got really cool toys these days that they can do things that we can only guess as herbalists. But I don't want to be a doctor for people, although some people in Port Townsend call me their doctor. What I want to be is to teach people how to prevent getting illnesses, because that's really what herbalism is about. I mean, the FDA kind of has it wrong. Our job isn't to cure a disease. It's to prevent the disease. And if we can prevent the disease, then we're not curing anyone. And I think that's why they're calling us dietary supplements, because that is now the big push. It was an oral tradition because nobody could be killed or hurt. Excuse me while I take this for a second. What are Port Townsend people calling today? Mountain Spirit, Denise speaking. Hi, Loyal. I'm doing pretty good. What's up? Yes, there's a sale on trauma oil. All of the any of the above that still have the label trauma oil on them. I'm going to be able to make it. The name will be changed to Comfort Oil. So if you guys want to come by, I'll be here all day, but I'm in the middle of an interview right now, so it'd be better in an hour or so. Okay, and then I'll just give you the discount, Paula. Okay, bye. I put an ad in the paper to get rid of a lot of my old labels because relabeling stuff is really difficult. And if I just sell off all the old stock, then I don't have to, when I remake things or re-pour things, I can just put it in under the new names.
So they didn't forbid you to sell what you had in stock under those old names?
Technically, they don't tell you anything. They build cases against you, is what I'm learning. When I asked if he was going to seize my product, he said no. But when I asked if I could sell my product, he didn't say anything. And I've talked to a couple lawyers, and I've talked to several people. Some people say, just dump everything. Other people say, you know, do what you have to do. I'm too small of a company to dump everything. I can't afford to not sell product. So what I'm doing is selling off my old stock that I can through the end of the year. And then I'm going to try to reformulate things or reword all of my labels. I've reworded most of my website. I've taken off all of the tinctures off of my website. I'm losing a lot of money with this. I mean, I don't make a lot of money, but nobody who doesn't know me personally can get any tinctures from me unless they're in Washington. It's legal for me to sell things in Washington state because then I'm under state law, not federal law. So I'm trying to get enough income put away that I can cover the basic bills through the next 3 months. The blessing of going public with all of this FDA stuff for me has been that there is a lawyer that stepped up who is local, who works with the FDA on food law, who is loaning me his intern to help work with me to recreate all of my labels and the appropriate wording on the web page to be able to at least have my front cover look something that the FDA will approve.
And this is pro bono?
This is pro bono. The lawyer I have that is the face to the FDA, I still pay. but I put a cap on how much I can pay him because I've raised about $16,000 so far, and four of it has already gone to the lawyer. So I capped him off, and now I'm doing as much as I possibly can on my own and just having him write letters to and from the FDA that I present of the products that I do. I have to check in with the FDA by the 22nd of every month and prove to them that each month I am making progress towards a dietary supplement company as opposed to a unapproved drug company, which is what they have me classified as now. They gave me a form which is called a 483 form. Basically, that form is building up a case against me in case they want to take me to court to sue me, or I don't know what they do. They can fine you, they can arrest you, they can take you to court and seize all your property. I mean, they're the federal government. They can kind of do whatever they want.
I have some friends who are acupuncturists, and they deal in herbs. They handle lots of herbs, which they actually do use as drugs. So what's the difference?
The difference is that I'm a traditional herbalist. There are no degrees in America for traditional herbalists. In order for me to legally treat people and give them herbs as drugs, then I would have to have schooling that is recognized by the government. My schooling is not recognized by the government. I have over 25 years of herbal education. Most of it started when I was 8 and with my great-grandmother went till I was about 16. And then there were other educators and then self-taught. But there is no standard for herbalists in this country. We're not even recognized. If I went to Canada or if I went to England, I could take a test, and just like a doctor would from state to state, and be recognized as a clinical herbalist.
But that certificate, even if you went to Canada or England and got one of those certificates, that would not be recognized in the United States?
Those are not recognized in the United States. Herbalists are not recognized as practitioners at all in the United States. I can have people come to my shop because I'm a reverend, and as a reverend, I can recommend people to use product and for their health benefits. On all of my labels prior to the FDA coming in, I did state that this is not an FDA-approved product and that people should consult a health practitioner before use. So all of my labels already say that. Apparently, the disclaimer I have is not current. It was good up until 2012, and they changed the laws, and I lost the...
Is there no new wording for the disclaimer that works?
There is wording for the disclaimer that works, but I still have to become a dietary supplement, and that's what Dennis Stein is showing me. He's giving me the exact wording, which is now on my website, along with the change of names of all of my oils. They have not harassed me about my teas. They say that's a different department.
Tea is just a food stuff, right? Unless you're claiming health benefits. But Celestial Seasonings kind of claims health benefits to their teas.
Well, we all claim some health benefits to our teas. I mean, I have a tea called calming tea, but calming is not a medical term. So I can use the word calming because it's not considered a medical term.
But if you call it anti-anxiety, then...
Then I could get in trouble.
I see.
But it's not just the name. They want me to trace where every ingredient comes from. They want me to prove that even though I've traced where every ingredient comes from, I know what that ingredient is, and I have a way to prove that I know what that ingredient is. They don't have a place in their rules for a business my size. The smallest business they have is at least 2 or 3 people. And that's because technically I can't prove something unless somebody else also proves it with me. In this case, I can use apprentices to help me sign off that we both know that the skullcap in my garden is actually skullcap, and that here's the proof, the color, the taste, the, if I don't send it to a laboratory and have it
lab. Which you can't afford to do.
No, each time you send something to the laboratory, the cheapest lab I've heard of is about, I think it was $30 to $90 a procedure. You know, so every time you send a piece of plant material to a lab and it costs you $30 to $90, that makes your tincture that was $14 for an ounce go to $20 an ounce, or you have to make larger batches. And the company that I went and talked to, what they're doing now, they used to make things in a gallon amount, which is pretty much for most of my tinctures the largest amount. There are a few that get 5 gallons, but most of them get a gallon. And now they're making everything in 5 gallon amounts so that they can afford to have everything tested and still be able to, you know. So if you make a batch, so that's how the FDA works, is you make this batch. You have to record the batch. You have to record where everything in the batch came from, including the alcohol. You have to record how you made the batch, how you pressed the batch. And then you have to record where it was, how many jars it was poured into, where those jars went to. Wow. So each jar gets a batch number and a lot number.
So this is all like new process that you've had to add into. I mean, that sounds like an incredible amount of
work.
Paperwork and, yeah, yes. Work, yes.
Yeah, well, these are called good manufacturing practices. And what I was told by another company, that means generate more paper. Everything has to be documented so that if somebody got sick from one of my tinctures or one of my teas, they would be able to trace exactly where everything came from. And I understand the concept for a very large company, but for my company, I didn't write any of this down because I could tell you where every batch and everything came from and when I made things and where they were. It's all in my head. So now what I'm having to do is I have these notebooks set up, and each notebook now has the date I made the echinacea, where the echinacea came from, who grew the echinacea, how I proved that it was echinacea, how I tinctured it, how many jars, how much weight was in each jar, because they also want you to be consistent in everything you do. And that is the detail they're wanting from everything I do now. It's making it very difficult to want to work. Because I'm not a scientist. I'm an herbalist.
Yeah, you grow a lot of your herbs, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So that
I haven't been on the farm since I think I've spent 3 days working on the farm since the FDA walked in my door. And lucky for me, they walked in September. So mostly I've done a lot of harvesting. And actually, just this morning, I went out and threw some seeds out for cover crop. They may or may not make it. It's December, but it's warm. But no, my farm is seriously having a hard time right now. I've pretty much given myself January, February, and March to try and do the mountain of paperwork that requires changing all the labels, changing the web page, changing all the names or 90% of the names of my tinctures, and getting a form in place that will make all of the checkpoints easier instead of making it up with each batch, just having a form. Did I do this? Did I do that? Did I do this? And I have some templates that a friend of mine is helping me work off of. I'm not very good at any of this stuff. This is all, a lot of it's beyond my education base. I never went to college. I never went to universities. So I didn't spend a lot of time being book learned in what the FDA is looking for. They're looking to be able to walk into my shop and pick up a procedure manual on any given subject that I do in my shop and be able to read about it and come in and do it.
Do you have any assurance that once you do all of this work, that it sounds like there's still this open question that, you know, like the FDA might come in and say, well, that's not enough and we're shutting
it down? Well, they will come in. It depends on how much they want to go after me. They could go after me until they nitpick me out of business. At this point, my greatest hope is that I can get my business to a compliance, and I'm so small that, one, they'll just leave me alone, or two, I can get it up into a compliance state where I can sell it to somebody else who can bring it further into compliance. I'm 56, almost 57 years old. I don't want to relearn and have to do everything different. I don't know. It feels like Big Brother to me. The FDA is just controlling all facets of our economy. We just narrowly were able to even run small farms in this country. There was a bill in Congress, and they were going to make it so regulated that farms like Red Dog and Nash's farm would probably be in the same boat I'm in, meaning that the burden of proof from the farms would be so extensive that it would be almost impossible to run their farms. And the FDA backed off on that, and narrowly we escaped it, so small farms are still okay at this point. I think these people that are working for these corporations and for our government agencies, they see all of us that are doing this producing and making of medicines as possible threats, threats to people's health, threats to the large corporations that are seeing the industry that I'm in the grassroots beginning of starting this, or had started this industry, as now a multi-billion dollar industry. And if you can knock out the people who started it and take it over, is it any different than the Salem witch hunts or the times when, you know, the doctors would learn from the wise women and then the wise women would be accused of witches? I just see a full circle.
But Joy is not a defeatist, and she managed to close our interview with a positive vision.
I've had this vision of turning my business into a school and having students do all of the mountain spirit work.
So not based on the sale of product, but just on education?
Based on mostly education. The school itself would sell product. California School of Herbal Studies did traditional medicinals. That's how that started. Oh. And so that was in the early 80s. And that was a pretty good model of that you can get your students to, you know, do the full circle, and the sales from the product go into the school, which then helps the school keep running. I think this community is a right place for young herbalists, and it's a right place for young alternative education. We have a wooden boat school. We have a woodworker school. We have dance. I think it would attract, you know, young herbalists. We have one of the most prolific herbal growing places in the world. We can grow more herbs in Jefferson County than I've seen grown even in Hawaii.
With traditional herbalist Denise Joy of Mountain Spirits Herbals, this is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Compass. This week's KPDZ Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. The Compass airs Mondays and Saturdays at noon, Tuesdays at 5 p.m., and Wednesdays at 10 a.m., exclusively here on KPTZ, the home of eclectic, authentic community radio. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.